You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
What's up, Kings fans, and welcome to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. I'm Scott Kimball, and I got to tell you guys, we have got a lot to unwrap today, so let's get right down to it. I'm going to bring in our co-hosts. The band is back together, by the way, the triumvirate of power, if you will. First of all, I'm going to bring in our leader, our presidente, the emperor. I can't say the emperor because that's another guy's title. But he's close. He is the one, he's the only, Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing well today. How are you?
Not too bad. Been a while.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, you know, you guys did a great podcast on the last one, so let's keep it going.
Well, you know what? You know what? It'll be even better now that you're here.
Oh, yeah. I hope I just don't ruin things, right?
I don't think that's possible. Don't worry about that.
Sorry,
and, of course, our other co-host. He is the Prince of PDO. He is the Count of Corsi. He is the Emperor of all things analytics in the hockey royalty world. And he has also become the go-to on Twitter for all your Kings questions, news, opinions, whatever you want to know. He is the one and the only Mr. Russell Morgan. What's going on?
Can we just stop with the long layoffs for the Kings and just play a regular season now?
I thought you were going to say stop with the long intro, Russ.
No, I bring it on. I like that.
Yeah. Cool. Add more. Yeah, let's add more.
The only thing Russ is missing is pyros in his intro.
Yeah, exactly. I told Scott last episode we need like some intro music.
I need like The Rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, I can't raise one eyebrow, so forget that. Oh, so anyways, you guys mentioned the long layoff. Yeah, of course, it was 13 days.
Yep.
13 days without Kings hockey. That's like an eternity in the middle of the season, right? So last night, we finally got our wish. We got a game. Didn't end the way we wanted it to, though. The Kings fell 5-2 to the Edmonton Oilers at home at the Crypto.com Arena. Still getting used to saying that.
We'll just say Staples. Staples, yeah. For short.
Oh, so anyways, guys, thoughts on the game?
I thought they came out a lot better than, I mean, like we talked about, Scott, before we hopped on here, but I thought they came out a lot better than I think I initially expected them to, you know, given they had 13 days off. Andre Kopitar in the pregame media session talking with Carlin Bates was, he admitted there's probably going to be some rust that they'll just shake off, but they'll get going. I mean, yeah, the Oilers had the puck for a good majority of the first few minutes, but then Kings kind of took it back, and they got rewarded with Kaliev's ninth goal of the year. You know, Kaliev, really did kind of the dirty work up against the sideboards there and got it back down low and then put himself right in front of the net. It kind of reminded me of his game tying goal, the game winner in the semifinal of the World Juniors, where he kind of like from Alex Turcotte, where he tapped his stick on the ice, he kind of like waved and got the puck and tipped it in. And on that play, it looked like on the replay, it looked like Mike Smith. I don't know what happened there, but it just kind of snuck by his glove and in between the posts. It was a really weird sequence, but anyways, it counts.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The Kings definitely got the benefit of a Mike Smith moment, and something we're kind of accustomed to seeing with his days in the Pacific Division with the Coyotes. But yeah, Ryan, it was a great start. I mean, just considering the long layoff that the Kings had, you were kind of expecting a little bit of rust and a little trying to shake off and get their feet underneath them. But they started off great, and to after the first period 1-0, I don't think you could have asked anything better. I mean, especially with Olimata taking a double minor high sticking penalty just a few minutes into the game, it was kind of like, oh no, here we go. Here's the big test for the penalty kill. Just going up against the Oilers, who are, I think, third in the NHL in power play. So, I mean, that was good to see them kill that penalty and then get a goal. That fourth line, that Lizotte line, is kind of Blake Lizotte has just looked like an entirely different player this season. He's looked better each game, and you're starting to see him play with a lot more strength in the corners. We've kind of joked here and there since he's joined the Kings that it's just seemed we're just kind of counting every game, every time he falls on the ice each game. But now lately you're starting to see a lot of more stability and a lot more balance from him with the puck on his stick. So that was good to see. But yeah, after the first period, it just kind of, there's just more mental lapses. And it was really reminiscent of the game after the COVID break against Vegas. And I kept thinking that, man, this reminds me exactly like that, where the team is playing really well and they're doing a lot of the small things right. But there's just these big mistakes, these big errors that just cost them dearly. And I think it was a very evenly played game. I don't think any team really dominated each way. I thought the Kings played really well 5-on-5, but special teams, that just continues to be an issue.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, and again, you know, like we were talking, you had to expect a slow start, right? I mean, I think they got a shot on goal throughout the first 6 or 7 minutes of the game. But overall, it wasn't really that bad at all. And I tell you, this is, you know, we've argued about this before. This is why I'm so against NHL going to the Olympics, part of it, right? Because these long layoffs just do so much to kill the momentum of a team that's playing good going into it. Yeah, it can be a savior for the ones that are coming out of it. Like, if you recall in 14, right, the Kings were floundering until the Olympic break, those 2 weeks off, and then they came back and they were a completely different team. But fact of the matter is, guys, this one hurts because with the loss, especially being in regulation, not getting a point at all, the Kings have actually dropped out of the third place spot in the Pacific Division and are now in the second wild card spot, with the Oilers replacing them in that third spot. But, you know, there's a lot of hockey left to be played. And, you know, in future shows, we'll talk more about the trade deadline and all that, but there's also moves to be made. But I got to tell you something. Overall, I think from that performance last night, I still say the Kings can hang with anybody in that Pacific Division. I really do. You know,
they got to. It's the issue all year long. They have to be able to finish, though. I mean, we'll get to it here, but might as well just jump into it. The power play, you know, 5 chances last night. Admittedly, they looked a lot better with their ozone control and also their zone entry, which has been a struggle with the drop pass this season. They just can't get anything into the back of the net. It's just so frustrating, especially when you're given 5 chances.
Sure it is. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And to capitalize on like chances, like the dumb penalties, like the Kane punch and all, and you're just kind of hoping like, okay, when is this power play going to actually capitalize and take advantage of these opportunities that they're getting? And it's just not happening. And I don't know. I've had people ask me like, well, what do you do to fix the power play? Cause I mean, we've talked about this at length. The Kings aren't a team with the players that can be successful on the power play. I shared last night, I mean, Vladimir Kachev has 2 points, and that's more than Phil Deneau and Dustin Brown, who played on the power play throughout the whole season. So I'm not really expecting much out of the power play, but I mean, you want something to happen. You want at least one goal, or when you're getting five opportunities, 20% or 18% would be nice. It's just it's just not happening. And I don't know. You have to look at more unconventional approaches, and it should have started with taking Dustin Brown off the power play unit. I don't know why he was still on there coming out of the break. I've looked into it of like 100 or players that have played 100 minutes on the power play this season. He has like the lowest amount of points per 60. It's just not working for him right now, especially after a last season where he had 9 power play goals in the 56 games. It's just weird. And it's you have to just look at more unconventional approaches and try to change up the strategy a lot more.
You know, two things I noticed was, for one, why is Adrian Kempe all of a sudden wanting to pass all the time?
Mm-hmm.
He had an all-star first half off shooting the puck, and he does that very well. I noticed that a few times last night where he had wide open scoring chances and chose to pass, and it didn't work out, of course.
Yeah, and I think even Alex Faust made a comment that maybe one too many passes. I forget which chance it was, but yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and McClellan actually mentioned that in the post-game press conference, that players that actually he's probably talking about Adrian Kempe, where he said that some players who are more accustomed or usually shoot the puck were looked at as a passers during the man advantage. So maybe that was about Kempe.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And, you know, the other thing, too, is you notice they get nothing in front of the net.
Yeah.
There's no grit. There's no, you know, no battle in front of that net. I mean, honestly, when the Kings are on the power play, and I hate to be, you know, Debbie Downer guy, right? But if the NHL goaltenders can see the puck, more than 9 times out of 10, they're going to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's really been their issue kind of all year long, get a body in front of the net.
Exactly. And really, that trickles through the rest of the team, too. I mean, don't get me wrong, guys. They've been much better than I thought they would be on an overall scale. But really, when you think about it for a second, Brendan Lemieux is basically your grit guy, mm-hmm. and you're not going to put him on the power play. So that's where I think a lot of the power play's problems have stemmed from. I honestly do. And the reason your shooters aren't scoring is because, like I said, the goalie can see everything. Mm-hmm. And if the goalie's not nervous and is – I mean, I'm not saying run the goalie. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is you're on the power play and that your opponent's goalie is in his crease, park somebody a few feet in front of him. Make him nervous. Take his eyes away. Just – have a presence, and that way, even if a puck gets knocked down or whatever, you've got a stick there for a rebound, because there's been way too many one and dones too. I mean, that's a given. So honestly, I think that's where, you know, if you're going to fix something, it starts right in front of the opponent's net.
Yeah, and we actually talked about that on the Hockey Royalty live channel on our YouTube page, where what's something that the Kings can bring that would help the power play, like an unconventional approach. And you mentioned Brendan Lemieux, and I think that's actually a good idea to place mm-hmm. him on the power play. I mean, yeah. Can't believe it would be any worse, right?
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, to lose.
And you watch him during the warmups, and after every warmup, Sean Durzi's throwing on point shots and he's deflecting the puck in the net. It's something he's working on. You can see it happening. And maybe that's an approach that the Kings should take, where he can bring that net front presence, almost like that Thomas Holmstrom type player, or Patrick Hornquist, who's just constantly wreaking havoc in front of the goaltenders or the opposing goaltender. So try that out. Maybe he brings a little bit more of a dirty aspect to the power play. Because you think about the Kings right now, we've talked about it at length. They're a team that's built for the 5-on-5. They're built for forechecking. And when you see a player like Phil Deneau, he's not that type of player that's just going to be able to stand around, puck handle, and then find the open player. He needs to constantly be moving. He's always hounding the puck. He's always on top of the puck. That's why you don't really see Trevor Moore or Phil Deneau or Dustin Brown really excel that much in the power play this year, because they like to always be moving and be forechecking and be hitting people. So I don't know. It's just maybe bring up Gabe Vilardi, see what he can do. Bring some more skill into the lineup that where they can have that. And
well, Russ, I think a prime example of Brendan Lemieux was back in the Canucks game in Vancouver, where Blake Lizotte had that excellent individual effort to strip the puck down low and then pass it back up to Christian Molanin at the point. and Melanin fired a blast on net, and Brendan Lemieux was in front of the net and redirected it, and it went in. You know, to your point, let's see someone like a Lemieux, or I know they had him up for 8 or 9 games or whatever it was, but, you know, Turcotte likes to sit in front of the net. Put Byfield in front of the net. My God, yeah. That is huge.
Right.
That was one of the more surprising things I saw out of the break. I mean, I was fully expecting Quinton Byfield to be on the power play. I mean, we know about his skill. He's still getting acclimated to the game during 5-on-5, but if you give him the opportunity to excel on the man advantage where he has time and space to use that high hockey IQ that he has, I mean, that just seems like a no-brainer, really, to get him. I mean, you think about it as like a basketball reference, just to – for a player who goes to the free throw line just to see the ball go through the hoop. I mean, for Byfield, then maybe that's something that can help him too. Just get the puck on a stick, give him that time and space where he can stick handle, feel the puck on a stick and make that right play and make the right pass too.
I wouldn't mind seeing Arthur Kaliev get some more power play time as well.
Yeah. Let him shoot.
And he's another big guy. The guy is not small.
Yeah.
You know, he's about 6'2", I think 195 pounds, 200 pounds. So, I mean, it's not like he's Blake Lizotte size, will say, you know, you can put him in front of the net. He's and actually his game has grown leaps and bounds this season. I hate to say it because I was actually against playing him on the fourth line, but it appears that it has worked because he has really rounded his game out. And let's not forget that world-class shot, guys. Let's not
I know.
And if you can get him on the power play, give him some looks with the high skill players that the Kings have, you can get that shot going. I firmly believe that. But with that notwithstanding, we were just talking about the Pacific Division standings. I'm going to give you guys the rundown of what it looks like as of today. So the Calgary Flames have moved into first place. The Vegas Golden Knights are second. The Edmonton Oilers are third. Our LA Kings, as I mentioned, are the second wildcard spot, followed closely behind by our crosstown rivals, the Anaheim Ducks, who have the same amount of points, but we're ahead of them in the standings.
I think we have 2 games in hand, right?
I'm looking at it right now. It's 1 game.
Oh, 1 game.
Okay. 1 game. So it's getting interesting, guys. It's getting tight. What do we see? Is this is Calgary going to win this division with the Tyler Toffoli trade? Does that put them over the top? Vegas has some interesting dilemmas right now. We'll talk about in just a second.
I think the coaching change was exactly what Edmonton needed. I don't know if you guys saw the quote from Warren Fogle, but he said Jay Woodcroft is paying attention to the details like we weren't before. It's basically backhanding Dave Tippett. And you're seeing that now. I mean, they've won 3 in a row, and they've won all 3 of Jay Woodcroft's games so far. They're playing much better defense and paying attention to the details. You know, Mike Smith coming into last night had allowed 4 goals in 3 out of his last 5 starts. And something that bothered me was like the little swagger that he had after the Kopitar shot it and he saved it. It's like, come on, man. He got like a 900 save percentage. You've given up 4 goals in 3 out of the last 5 of your starts. You're probably going to be injured from this celebration.
You know what's funny? It's funny that you mentioned that because you're talking about the glove save he had, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So right after that play, I thought the same thing. I'm like, man, that's a little bit flashy for a goaltender that gave up that first goal that looked like. So now you're trying to tell everybody your glove's working all of a sudden. So that was a little surprising. And actually, Adrian Kempe skated around him. And I think he said something to Smith because Smith looked over to him and looked like they were jawing at each other back and forth. So I'm sure Kings noticed that as well.
And you know what's funny, though? Mike Smith must have been thinking, well, it's now or never to be able to do something like that. Right?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I have a very long-winded response, but I'll kind of keep it succinct here. But I really think it's going to be kind of a 3-dog fight to the top from here on out. I like the addition of Tyler Toffoli to an already hot, no pun intended, Calgary Flames team. Vegas is getting Jack Eichel in the lineup tonight, Wednesday, whenever you guys listen to this. We will see him on Friday in Vegas. It's going to be tough for the Kings to find an area for them to kind of squeeze into a third spot. You know,
You just disappointed me, Ryan. I thought you were going to go with a Three Dog Night reference.
Dang it. I thought I covered all my bases here, but apparently not.
The king of dad jokes disappoints.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going
into the season, I fully expected the Kings to be one of the wild card teams. It's not really surprising to me to see the top three be what it is now. I'm not ready to anoint the Oilers this, like, the team that everyone expected them to be yet. I mean, you look at the teams they beat since in this three-game winning streak that they're on. The Islanders at home, they have really no offensive game, so to shut them out or to allow one goal is not really that expected. The Sharks are kind of an up-and-down team, and then the Kings coming off 13 days. Of course, there's going to be some rust there, so we'll have to wait to see if they can keep the ball rolling and keep that defensive aspect to them, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them finish in the top three, and then with the way the Flames are playing and the Vegas Golden Knights are a deep team, they should be the top two teams in the Pacific Division, and I picked the Kings to be a wild card. So you just have to look at Anaheim, Winnipeg, who's up and down, and the Stars, who are starting to come along as well, to be the teams that the Kings are going to be vying for that last wild card spot throughout the end of the season.
You know, here's the thing, guys. With the Flames, they have bought in to Daryl Sutter.
Absolutely.
And we all know what happens when teams buy into Daryl Sutter's systems, right? And let's be honest, their goaltending is lights out with Jacob Markstrom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, Russ. The Vegas Golden Knights are getting Jack Eichel back. However, it's addition by subtraction because now Mark Stone is on LTIR. Mm-hmm. And reports are Robin Leonard is hurt. So that could change things dramatically for Vegas. If this turns out to be an injury that's going to bother Leonard for the rest of the season, now they got to do something in goal. And they're out of players they can put on LTIR to try to create more cap space.
Are you sure about that?
I feel all right, right?
Ow, my knee. Ow.
Yeah, my hamstring is starting to hurt there, Scott.
Yeah, I was quite I'm like, oh, wow, look at that. Eichel's ready to come off. Because, I mean, I know there's 1,000, theories out there that, well, is it conspiracy theory? Is it not? You know, we've talked about this. All right, it is in the rules that you can do this.
Yeah. Right?
It's there. There's no doubt about it. The Chicago Blackhawks paved the way. The Tampa Bay Lightning paved the way. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's a conspiracy theory, but let's also be honest. The Vegas Golden Knights were not going to miss the playoffs with or without Mark Stone. They weren't. So they can afford to lose somebody like Mark Stone. Much like last year when Tampa Bay could afford to lose Nikita Kucherov. Because guess what? They were going to the playoffs. There was no if, and, ors, or buts about that. I will say this, though. If this turns out to be another situation where he's miraculously healthy for game one of run, I don't know. At that point, I say, why even bother having a salary cap? Why bother with it? It's pointless. If you're going to have all these loopholes to get around it. I mean, that's kind of – and listen, is it good for the league to have teams that have stars and are great teams? Yeah, it's good for the league overall. Right, you don't necessarily want 32 teams that are all the same. You do want teams that have got some that are, well, let's face it, got some superstars and have got talent. That's what sells the game, right? What I'm saying is, it's just, to me, it's just kind of this whole the timing. Once again, it was just like that with Tampa Bay, and you know what, guys, I'm not fully convinced that Jack Eichel is going to make a huge impact right off the hop. I'm not.
Guys, we're going to replay this clip later tonight, Scott, after he gets a hat trick.
I know, right? Yeah. And we'll have to make a graphic of me eating a lot of crow. But it's one game. No, I mean, I think he's going to be good for the Knights. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the guy's a world-class talent. All I'm saying is, how long has it been since he's actually played a regular season game? You can practice all you want, and you can do game simulations all you want. But it does not compare to actual, real NHL play. And I think it's going to take him a little bit to get his feet under him. I really do. It does mean, though, that it looks like they're not going to have to move Riley Smith out. So that's going to help him. But I think it's all going to hinge on what happens with Robin Leonard as far as the Vegas Golden Knights go. Now, with the Edmonton Oilers, you're right, Russ. I'm not sold on them. Listen, teams go on winning streaks all the time. It happens. I mean, the Seattle Kraken can go on a 4 or 5 game winning streak. Okay. But the fact of the matter is, and there's still time to make moves. I'm not sold on Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen leading the Edmonton Oilers to a Stanley Cup. I don't care if they have Connor McDavid. I don't care if they have Leon Draisaitl. You still need solid goaltending. And they don't have it. They don't have it. I mean, yeah, the coaching change is good for them. It probably was the best thing to do, right? Clear the air. Breath of fresh air, new start. But you really want to have the Edmonton Oilers going up against the Calgary Flames in the playoffs? And I'm just leaving the Kings out of this. Say against the Flames, who have got Jacob Markstrom, who was a Vezina candidate, and a team that can roll four lines and play very good defense. This is basically the team that the Kings want to be, right? I'm not sold on the Oilers. And the Ducks, well, you know, I mean, they've had a great season. You have to take your hat off to them. I know they're our big rival, but how much longer is this going to last too? So I think right about now, the Kings are right about where they should be insofar as the wild card spot vying for the third spot. Again, lots of time left, lots of moves to be made, but this is kind of the way the things are shaking out, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, if you ain't manipulating the cap, you ain't trying. I mean, yeah, like you said, Scott, it's beneficial to the league when superstars are playing. I mean, you look at the NBA, it's a superstar league. I don't ever want the NHL to get to the point where players are just making decisions about where they want to play and when they're happy or not. But I mean, it's just better for the league when you have your superstars playing in the game. And Jack Eichel is a superstar. So to have him playing, especially to debut against a team like the Avalanche tonight, that's just going to be must watch TV.
Absolutely.
Along with the USA Canada women's gold medal game. I'll be tuning into both of those. So it's going to be a fun night of hockey.
You're on TV today, aren't you?
Yeah. It's going to be a fun night of hockey. I'm actually really excited, but as far as the whole LTIR thing, almost all teams have done this or are doing this right now. The Kings are doing this right now. Alex Edler's on LTIR. Sean Walker's on LTIR. Drew Doughty was on LTIR, I believe, at one point. So, I mean, this is just something that it's an even playing field. Everybody is able to do this. And for the Golden Knights, they're a team who's built to win right now. And that's exactly what the Tampa Bay Lightning were last year. They were a team that was built to win now. So if you have the players in your locker that are able to contribute and to help you win the Stanley Cup, I mean, you have to do whatever you can to make that happen. And that's where the Golden Knights are right now. And the biggest part is if they don't win, then what happens? What happens next season? Because we're seeing that happen with Tampa Bay, where they had to get rid of a couple players to move on. But fortunate for them, they won. So if the Golden Knights are able to win, then there's going to be some moves being made in offseason for Vegas.
Oh, there's no doubt. No doubt about it. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to hit on what Russ said there at the end, but, you know, if they don't win, they're still going to have to move like a Riley Smith, or they have to move Alec Martinez off the roster. You know, something's going to have to give here.
Yeah, they're going to have to. And, I mean, it'll be very interesting to see who goes. But, you know, getting Jack Eichel had better put them over the top, because right now, I can tell you, living in New York State, that trade for Buffalo is starting to look pretty good.
Oh, Alex, yeah. Alex Tuch has been dynamite.
And I'm going to tell you something. I've seen Peyton Krebs play because he was, you know, with the Rochester Americans, and they play here in Utica. That kid's the real deal. He is the real deal. And I'm going to tell you, if Vegas wasn't in a win-now mode, there's no way you get rid of that kid. No way. But like you guys said, they're win now. So they did what they had to do, which is understandable, right?
Yeah.
You're going to make that big swing, do it.
Yeah, out of all the players that I was afraid of for Vegas in the future, Alex Tuch was high on my list, probably like the number one, because it was more about his contract too. I mean, with the contract that they signed him to, Vegas was really smart to do this, to sign him to a long-term deal just before he was starting to break out. And now that he's with Buffalo and he's starting to really break out and show the type of player that he really is, I mean, I almost took that as like, man, that's almost just like a win for Buffalo almost. I thought they did really well in that trade to get Alex Tuch to shed. I mean, you lose Jack Eichel, who's a top 10 center in the league, but at $10 million a year for however so long. And then now you have Alex Tuch, who's almost just as a good, just as a productive player as Jack Eichel at like half the salary he signed for at almost the same length. I mean, that's an absolute steal for Buffalo. And I think they did really well in that trade. And we'll have to see how it impacts Vegas because, I mean, they're a team, they're a real cutthroat team when it comes to trading players or signing players. They don't care how long you've been with the team or how successful you've been with the team. I mean, look what they did with Marc-Andre Fleury. They'll do whatever they can to win. And I'm wondering if how much that impacts them and players that look to go to Vegas and free agency or anything when they think about that, those type of moves that they've made.
Yeah, I don't know so much it'll affect that much because Vegas isn't the first team that's ever done that type of thing, right? I mean, if you look, like, say, just using baseball, for example, the Yankees, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you're offering money, they're going to come. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it, right?
It's the pinstripes.
I say that because, I live on the East Coast, right? I could have, mm-hmm. Any of the big-time major league teams, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, whatever. Vegas is also getting Alec Martinez back, aren't they?
I'm not sure. I believe that.
I think he's coming back soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll help him too. But honestly, I'm going to tell you guys something. I think in the grand scheme of things, I think the Kings match up well with Vegas. I think they do. I think they're built right now to be able to hang with a Vegas, to be able to hang with an Edmonton, because let's face it, they got, if you're going to keep Dreisaitl on McDavid's line, then the Kings basically have the best 1-2 center punch in the entire division.
Oh, I'm sorry, Scott, I misspoke. There was an update yesterday. Alec Martinez just not there in recovery, Knights GM says.
Oh,
so okay. It looks like he'll be out a little bit longer.
Okay. Well, yeah, because they were talking about it for the past couple of days, saying, well, he...
Right. Looks like it changed course. Maybe he's got to fit in that salary cap, right?
Yeah, to speak more on the matchups that the Kings are able to do against the other teams, I mean, I'd put the Kings up with any team. And they've shown that they're able to play
with any team
in the NHL. Yeah, and it's kind of hard because we put a lot more of a microscope on this last game against the Oilers, and the score isn't indicative of the way the game was played at all.
No,
I mean, they scored two
empty goals. Yeah, it was a 3-2 game.
It was a 3-2 game going into the last 2 minutes of the game. So really close game, and it was tied, I think, with 6 minutes left or so. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Kings are built. I mean, with Phil Deneau, the Kings have a real solid defensive center to help Kopitar. I mean, we talked about this at length, and they were able to suppress and I think really slow down Connor McDavid. I mean, he had quite a bit last game. He had 2 points, but I think one of them was on the empty net goal and assist on Hyman's goal. And then he had that one goal where Mike Anderson just decided to bulldoze over Cal Peterson. I mean, I don't really know how much more help Connor McDavid needs, but I mean, if those mental mistakes don't happen, then yeah, the Kings would probably come out with a win in that game. So yeah, it's just hard because the long layoff, Kings, they're coming off a franchise record setting road trip. You're expecting, oh yeah, let's keep the ball rolling, and then so we're just waiting for Kings hockey to come back, and then all of a sudden there's kind of a letdown, and it's just very reminiscent of that Vegas game. So we'll have to see how it happens on Friday, and it'll be a really good test for the Kings to see, okay, well, you have that first game out of the way. Let's see how you go going forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, on that Mikey play because Connor got Cal Peterson to open up there pretty good, and he still made an awesome leg pad stop mm-hmm. on the initial attempt. And then Jesse Puljujärvi comes in for support, and for whatever reason, Mikey Anderson pushed him right into his own goaltender, right? That rather than off to the side,
and or just type a stick or something. Yeah,
I thought Mikey overall had a pretty good game last night. He had that huge hit.
Yamamoto.
Yes, he had that active stick on. I think McDavid when he was trying to streak towards the Oilers offensive zone, he kind of just got his stick in there and broke up the play. But yeah, it was just really interesting. And another thing that, I mean, I wanted to talk about it too. The Kings just seem to have like this innate ability to take penalties within the first few minutes of a period. Like we saw the old Imada one, the high sticking that drew blood. You know, 3:19 into the first period, Kings kill it off. I think the Oilers had four shots on goal and like two or three actually reached Cal Peterson. And then into the second period, I think the Kings had 24 seconds of power play time left, and Dustin Brown commits a hooking penalty on Darnell Nurse, you know, 10 seconds in. And you go into the third period. I think then the Kings start with like 50-some seconds of power play time.
54.
And then Arthur Kaliev gets called for holding on Philip Roberg. Just they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot when they do those things. I mean, granted, the power play has its own challenges, but when you're going to, I guess, shorten the time on your opportunities, that's not going to help anything either.
Yeah, you know, that's the difference between good teams and great teams.
And I'm not just talking about, you know, last night was a prime example. I've seen it throughout this season, too. You know, the Kings start a period and they commit a penalty within the first, like, minute or two.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with, like, strong starts have been drilled into this team because we've seen so many games where the Kings just come out kind of sluggish and slow. So I wonder if Tom McClellan has really drilled that, hey, we need a strong start to start the game, to start the period, especially last night when you want to come out with fire after that long layoff. And maybe there was a little bit more of an aggressiveness with Olimata and just kind of, it was more almost, I don't want to say it was a careless play because he's trying to lift the stick and he misses and he hits whoever it was in the face. And it's just, we see that happen time and time again here and there. But yeah, like you talked about, Ryan, it's just a lot more noticeable with the Kings because when these penalties happen, and hopefully they're able to cut them down for the rest of the season.
Well, you know, what might have been part of it too was waiting through the 1,000-game ceremony for Drew Doughty. I love that. See, and I know this sucks for Edmonton having to sit through this.
Yeah, we'll get out there in a sec. But I messaged Russ this last night, but during that entire ceremony, the only thing that I was thinking about was I'm going to get to bed like 20 minutes later, aren't I?
It literally was 1:30 here in the East when I went to bed. I was like,
yeah, oh, yeah, I was like, yeah, 12:30 when I called it quits.
Oh, man. But yeah, I think, you know, going forward, obviously there's things that got to get cleaned up. There's no doubt about that. But I think overall, we'll see how this long layoff does affect them. You can't judge the entirety by last night. You can't. That was the first game back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they got to get some legs under them. But the nice thing is that, you know, looking at the standings, these disparities between games played are starting to close up a little bit. So now you can get kind of a true gauge of where the team is and where it's headed. Because before it was hard because, you know, like Calgary and Edmonton had like, what, 6-7 games in hand. And, you know, it's just – so that's starting to close, even though Calgary's taking full advantage of it. But, again, a lot of time left. And
yeah, I just want to – I mean, if we look at the next couple of games, and apologize for our listeners, I'm a little under the weather, so sorry if I keep coughing into your headphones. But look at – they got Golden Knights on Friday, and then they got Arizona on Saturday. So, I mean, this is kind of a critical stretch that they're in right now. And just segueing from that, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the Coyotes venue situation. What do you guys think about that 5,000-seater for Arizona State?
Well, I'll let Scott start off because I have a lot of thoughts on that.
How embarrassing. How embarrassing. I mean, if it was only to be for one season, it would be a little bit more palatable, right? But we're talking about three seasons. Come on. At what point does this not end? Because even if they do get that new arena, what's the guarantee that this same kind of thing isn't going to happen in 10, 12 years? I think they gave it the best shot that they could. I do. But, I mean, somebody brought it up on Twitter. Could you imagine if somehow, some way, the Coyotes managed to make the Stanley Cup Finals while playing in a 5,000-seat college arena?
I'm just trying to picture what the, I guess, camera view would look like.
You know? Can tell you, right? Watch AHL TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch a junior hockey game.
That's exactly what it's going to be. You know, like I said, it's just you got to feel for the fans that are there. You really do. And you know what? You really do. You have to feel for the players. But I mean, at what point, man? At what point did you not just say enough's enough? This can't go on anymore. I mean, it's,
maybe Jacob Chychrun's like, enough is enough. I need
to go to LA. Yeah.
I can't deal with this anymore.
So I think this is a good thing for the Coyotes and a great thing for the fans in Arizona. And I'll tell you why. I lived in Arizona for a couple of years. I went to a ton of hockey games just here and there. And whenever they were in Phoenix and when they moved out to Glendale, I would make the drive out there. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar, if our listeners are familiar. The Phoenix area is just pretty much just one big metro. That's what it is. It's, you have Phoenix right in the middle. You have Tempe. You have Chandler. You have Scottsdale. And then all the way on the left is Glendale. That's where the Coyotes are playing. That's where the Arizona Cardinals are playing. It's where their big jobbing.com or University of Phoenix, wherever the big arena is out there. When they moved the team out to Glendale, they thought that the fans would make that drive out there. And when you talk about that drive, you're talking about like a good 45 to an hour drive to drive from Phoenix to Glendale, considering traffic and all that. And yeah, it works for the Cardinals when you're only doing it 8 times a year. Yeah, that's totally fine. But when you're asking for a fan base to travel out there 41 times a year, it's not really going to happen. It's not going to work. So I was, when that actually happened, I'm like, man, in the long run, it's going to be horrible. Fans aren't going to go there. They're not going to want to travel. It's just not going to work. So when I heard about this move, I was like, you know what? This is actually a good thing. And I was actually in Arizona this past during Super Bowl weekend. I would try to get out to Waste Management Open. That was a lot of fun. And then hanging out with some friends and family.
Did you go to that, Russ?
I didn't actually. I did other things. I've gone to it a bunch of times, and I highly recommend anyone go.
Yeah, I want to get the tickets to the 16th hole.
It's awesome. A party. I've been in the 16th hole. It's just so much fun. But, yeah, so I talked to a lot of people, and I have some friends that still play hockey out there and everything like that, and they're really excited for this move for the Coyotes. Their team's only going to be – they're going to be right down the street from where a lot of hockey fans and a lot of people really live, and that's kind of where Arizona is growing. They're growing from the Tempe area and going down south. That city's not really growing to the west. So to have a fan base that's able to travel to games and make it a lot easier, say you get off work in Tempe or Phoenix and you only have to drive 15, 20 minutes to see a game. Yeah, the venue's a lot smaller, but just imagine that environment it's going to create, especially when you have teams like Chicago or LA or Toronto come in and you get those opposing fan bases who are willing to pay the extra money and to bring a kind of jubilant atmosphere to that small arena. I think that's really going to help and really going to kind of bring a good focus of hockey to the desert out for Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is one way to look at it. You're right. And thank you for explaining that, because I am very, very, very unfamiliar with the Phoenix area. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are, and I think they don't really understand that distance that is involved with going to see the Coyotes right now in Glendale.
Right. So they're basically in a similar situation that the Ottawa Senators are. The Canadian Tire Center is about an hour outside of the Ottawa city limits.
Okay.
So it's basically the same thing. But you know what I kind of wonder too? With them going into a 5,000-seat arena, how much more are ticket prices going to go up? Because if you have a team that's struggling, right, you can't go up that much more to make up. You're never going to make up the difference in revenue. I mean, even at their worst, they were drawing what, 10,000-12,000 a game, something like that.
That could be generous.
Yeah, even at your rock bottom figure, you're cutting your revenues in half just off ticket sales alone. Not to mention, and concessions doesn't really count because that's usually privately owned now and contracted out, anyways. But how much more are those ticket prices going to go up? Obviously, you have to go up some, because where the heck is the money coming from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just, like I said, you know, the problem I have with it is for the length of it. Again, if it was one season, hey, you deal with it, you get through, you do what you got to do. So does anybody know, is this arena for sure going to be built?
It's being constructed right now.
Yeah. Okay, so it is I mean, you know how these things go too. 1 minute it's a go, next minute, oh no, this happened and this zoning thing and whatever.
Yeah, if you follow Craig Morgan, he covers the Coyotes. He's got like a picture of him standing in the middle of the, I guess what you call the ice. But they're kind of building up the bleachers.
All right. Well, I mean, good for them because you know what? I think it's actually important for the NHL for that market to make it. I think so too. Population center there, mm-hmm. you know, and it can only help having hockey thrive in Arizona. Of course, it does kind of leave Houston out in the cold.
For now. I think they'll eventually get a franchise.
Yeah, but I don't think
you can expand anymore.
The distance is the biggest factor, though, here. I mean, especially with ASU being right down the street, you have some college kids who maybe can grow some interest in the game. Because, I mean, ASU draws a lot of college students from all over the country because of its kind of party aspect to it. A lot of people love going to ASU. I had some fun times there too. But yeah, I mean, just think of it from like a Kings fan point of view. I mean, traveling to that new arena in the 45, however many capacity it's going to be. I mean, that's going to be a great place to watch a hockey game if you're really invested in the teams that you're looking to see. So I think it's going to be beneficial to them. And I don't think they, I mean, yeah, you can poke fun at them for the arena that they have. I saw the San Jose Barracuda throw something out on Twitter saying, hey, I think ours is bigger. So yeah. That was pretty funny. But yeah, I think from where they were at before in Glendale at Gila River, I think this is an upgrade for them.
Well, you can look at it this way. If they can survive these 3 years at minimal revenues and whatnot, they have got a ton of draft picks coming up to rebuild that team and get it ready to go by the time that new arena opens up. So that could be another factor at play as well. Guys, we're starting to run out of time here. You got anything else you want to talk about real quick before we close out?
I want to touch on QB real quick, Quentin Byfield.
Yep.
What do you guys – and so he played 8 minutes last night. He's playing with Dustin Brown and Andre Athanasiou. He looked really good in his first game with the Kings, and he's kind of looked so-so since it's happened. Do you think there's a possibility that he gets sent back down before his entry-level contract kicks in, which I think it would be not this next game, but if he plays the game after that, that would mean he's with the team for the rest of the season. What do you guys think?
I think he stays up. I was going to keep it short. I think they might change line mates with him.
Yeah.
Especially around the trade deadline. Let's say they part with an Athanasiou. Let's say they call up Gabe Vilardi and put him on his wing. Call up Alex Turcotte, put him on his wing. I'm not sure what you do with Dustin Brown, but we can kind of just imagine that it all fits together. But I think you keep him up, you let him develop at the NHL level, just try out different people with him.
Right. I think you're right, Ryan, because he's gone as far as he's going to go in the AHL. I mean, he's already proven he can light that league up. And you can't keep sending him down, up without it at some point affecting his confidence for starters. And you can actually stunt his development a little bit if you say, okay, well, we're going to send you back down to the A for a little bit, but we'll bring you back. And so he gets used to the play in the American League. Then he comes back up to the National League and it's starting all over again. So I think as tempting as it would be to prevent that ELC from kicking in, I think at this point, you're right, Ryan, the Kings have to leave him up with LA. And number one, just, you know what? He's going to take the rookie lumps. That happens, right? I mean, everybody thought Alexei Lafreniere, the guy who was drafted ahead of him, was a kid miss, is going to score 30 goals right out of his first season. Didn't happen. It rarely happens. Right. So
what's he at now?
He's at 10. He's got 10 goals on 58 shots on goal. So tell me what's going on there, right? Unreal shooting percentage, maybe. But no, I think you just got to leave him where he is, let him develop, and he'll pick his game up. There's too much talent there for it to not happen. I think they find the right line mate combination for him, and he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rob Blake did it. And the only reason I say that is because of what the players in the AHL are doing right now who've gotten the taste. You look at a Jared Anderson Dolan who's just lighting it up right now. Everyone's asking where Gabe Vilardi is. And, yeah, you can bring those players up, but where are you going to play them? So maybe you send Quentin Byfield down before his entry-level contract kicks in and give him some time, more another year in the AHL. I thought that's something that they could possibly look into doing. Before the preseason started, where he started to look really good. Yeah, I want to see more out of Quentin Byfield. A lot of people do. He's still 19 years old. He's a really young player, obviously. But I do want to see more. And I think maybe if you're going to change something, if you're not going to send him down, I think you have to start with the line mates. And I thought he looked really good in the first game. I think it was with where he was playing with Carl Grundstrom. But since then, maybe the chemistry with Dustin Brown just isn't there, or Andreas Athanasiou, and try some other players there just to kind of elevate his game a lot. Because, I mean, really, last night he just went as kind of invisible. And there's going to be those games. He's a young player, and it's going to happen throughout his rookie season. So we'll just have to see what happens. And maybe he does stick with the Kings and excels and is able to look like the superstar that he's supposed to be.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, too. You can't put the Kings contending for a playoff spot. They don't have that option of playing musical chairs with the prospects at the big club level anymore. You've got to pretty much establish what you want and go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't, well, we're going to give them five games to try it out. That was okay last year when they weren't contending, but now they're contending.
Mm-hmm.
And you pretty much, or you are at the point in the season where you have to say, okay, this is what we got. This is what we're going to run with and go.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting though.
It will be.
We are not inside the mind of Rob Blake, so we will just have to wait and find out.
As much as we want to be.
I know, right?
I found it interesting last night that he shared a wall with Oilers GM Ken Holland. Did you guys – well, Russ, you probably didn't because you were there. But, Scott, did you see when the camera panned to Rob Blake and Ken Holland was on the other side of the wall?
Yeah.
So yeah, be careful what you say out loud, right?
Yeah, right. I'm surprised we see any glasses next to it with their ears, you know?
Yeah. Boy, that Connor McDavid kid, we got to trade for him.
I didn't actually see there's actually rumors of that, though. Is that on?
He's not going anywhere.
No. Oh, well, guys, I think that's all we got for today. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. So we're going to do this again soon, hopefully on a better note. Hopefully the Kings will around this weekend and take down the Knights and take down the Coyotes, and we'll be all happy, happy, joy, joy, and ready to go for next week. So, and well, we'll see if there's any more trade news to talk about as well, but remains to be seen. Anyways, everybody, thank you for listening. We appreciate all your support and you guys listening to our pod all the time and commenting on our social media, reading our articles on hockeyroyalty.com. We just, again, without your guys' support out there, we couldn't do this. So,
yes, thank you
very much. So, anyways. For Ryan Sykes, for Russell Morgan, I'm Scott Kimball. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Hockey Royalty Podcast. Go Kings, go.
Thanks, guys.